Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Brenda Russell, and there is definitely a buzz happening, Brandon's Buzz.
Hey, this is Nicholas Rodriguez. You are listening to Brandon's Buzz. Be prepared to laugh. You're going to have a good time.
Hi, I'm Alita Adams. Everybody is all abuzz about Brandon's Buzz. This guy is the person to listen to. I wish you could do all the interviews.
So if you feel that you just can't take it, and your world isn't what it seems, don't forget that life can be what you make it, baby, when you live on a street of dreams.
Hey, this is Nia Peoples, and you're with Brandon's Buzz. It's a place to be.
Hi, this is Lynn Herring on Brandon's Buzz. It's the great entertainment talk show on now. Brandon, I love you. Thanks for having me.
This is Connie Pasolako-Hayman, otherwise known as Marlena Delacroix. Have a great time with Brandon. I always do. He's a fantastic interviewer, and I'm saying that because I'm a journalism professor, and he's a pro.
This is Maya Bialik, and you are lucky enough to be listening to Brandon's Buzz.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Brandon's Buzz. It is September 16th, 2009. It's 10 a.m. here in Texas. It's 11 a.m. out in sunny New York, and it's 8 a.m. bright and early in California. And I thank you for coming back to Brandon's Buzz. You know, it's a big day for Brandon's Buzz today. It is a Guiding Light Palooza. I've got a great guest right now, and I've got a great guest coming up tonight. Her name is Pamela K. Long. She was the head writer of Guiding Light for about 7 years and throughout most of the 80s. And she is, you know, widely regarded as one of the most important, if not the most important, and most interesting, and most compelling storytellers in the storied history of Guiding Light. And we're going to talk all about that tonight. That is at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. here in Texas, right here at Brandon's Buzz. You can find Brandon's Buzz at www.blogtalkradio.com/Brandon's Buzz. That's kind of mission control for the show. You can listen to the show, you can download old shows, you can listen to old shows, you can leave comments, you can send me an email, you can tell me what you like, you can tell me what you don't like. It's kind of mission control for Brandon's Buzz. That's blogtalkradio.com/Brandon's Buzz. You can also find me at my blog, brandonsbuzz.com. There's a full radio archive of every show that I've had. I've had 33 shows so far. They're all up at brandonsbuzz.com in the radio archive. Just look at the top of the page. Click on the radio button up there. I'm also on iTunes. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm all over the place. There's no excuse not to be able to find me. Just Google the words Brandon's Buzz, and something will pop up that will point you in my direction. And I appreciate those of you who have found me, and those of you who continue to find me and continue listening to me. So, as I said, it's a Guiding Light Palooza all day today, tonight with Pam Long, and today with a great guest. And, you know, I'm a little nervous about this, so if I sound nervous, it's because I am, because I have a fantastic guest today. You know, my guest has become quite a regular here at Brandon's Buzz, and I couldn't be more thrilled about that fact, because for a decade plus, she and I had a standing date every Monday, which was the day that I would rush to the grocery store and tear the place apart, searching for the latest issue of Soap Opera Weekly. Sometimes I would wait until I had made it back to the car, but most weeks I would just stand there at the checkout counter and flip through the magazine until I reached her page, so anxious was I to get her take on the latest activities. In critical condition, the legendary column she penned for that magazine for 12 glorious years, she wrote some of the most probing, most insightful, most compelling prose about Guiding Light and its numerous ups and downs that any journalist ever dared to. And on the wrenching occasion of this classic soap's final episode, which is coming on Friday, I knew that this was one of the people I needed to speak with, and I am so thrilled and honored that she said yes. Indeed, I am so thrilled and honored to welcome back to Brandon's Buzz this morning the hilarious, the outrageous Marlena Delacroix herself, Connie Pasolako-Hayman.
Hi, Brandon. It's a pleasure for me to be back on your show. Always a pleasure. I just wish that we didn't have to have this very sad, sad occasion this week with the end of Guiding Light.
Oh, my gosh. Tell me about it. You know, it's the show that's been on the chopping block for a good decade at least. But, you know, it's still sad and almost unbelievable a little bit to realize that it's finally here.
Oh, it's so emotional, I think, for anyone who has watched it or who's been in it. And everybody in the soap industry has been on that show, which I could talk about. And it's just like, you know, it's like it's such a big thing to all of us. You know, even if we didn't watch it now, you know, some chance that we watched it at some point in our soap careers, watching soap. So it's, you know, a piece of home.
So, you know, before we get into Guiding Light Memories, I want to talk about you and Critical Condition. You know, I know we got into this a little bit the first time you were on the show, but I'm going to be quoting liberally from past columns of yours throughout this show.
Okay.
And I want to know what it was like for you, how it felt to be really the only one out there doing this kind of thing. I mean, you know, Digest had a little bit of criticism, almost all of it anonymously written.
Uh-huh.
And Logan now and then delved into critical pieces, but for most of your run at Soap Opera Weekly, there was nobody in your lane. You had it all to yourself.
Well, thank you.
What was that kind of power like? What was it like to...
Well, I didn't think about the power. And, you know, now that I'm older, I understand it better. But it was like me expressing my love of soaps, you know. And I'm a writer, so I was very lucky to combine, you know, my love as a writer and my love of soaps every week and get paid for it. And, you know, and they really didn't, you know, challenge my opinions. And Mimi Torchin, who was the editor of the magazine, who I had known for many, many years before the magazine even started,
yeah,
you know, stuck up for me. That's not, you know, with the network. So it really was an ideal job, and boy, I miss it. You can see now I have my own column on the internet, which is www.marlenazilacroix.com. I loved it so much that I came back to it. But in terms of power, it was interesting. I have many stories. I have good stories and
yes,
bad stories. Which one do you want?
You take your pick.
Okay, well, the good stories is, you know, all of a sudden the head writers found me, you know, and I was like, why do they want to talk to me, you know, and they, you know, and they found me, and, you know, a lot of the head writers and producers were very nice to me, but I was so naive at the time, I didn't understand it, you know, and I'm not the kind of person, like, that really, like, you know, like, likes being with stars. I
yeah,
loved head writers because they were fantastic, and
uh-huh,
I was very, very lucky, and they taught me so much about soaps and writing.
And that was the year when the head writer really had all the power.
Yes, but they were losing it, too. So I got to see when they had it and when they were losing it, you know. The bad side of it was, it's hard to think of any really bad side of it. But, you know, it's as there started to be a lot of people who started doing what I did. And I don't know, you know.
Not nearly as well, either.
Thank you. But, you know, that was the only bad side. I would say it was all a plus. You know, really, it's the best job I ever had.
Absolutely. You know, how good of a secret, or how badly kept of a secret, was your true identity in the world? Did everybody know who you were?
Yes, yes. Because I'll tell the story again. I should wear it as a sign on my back. when Soap Opera Weekly started, I was working for Episodes magazine, and Episodes was like the ABC magazines, and they paid a whole lot of money. And the editor, Joanne Burke, said, well, you can't work for us and work for a soap opera magazine. You know, this is a conflict of interest. You have to come up with a pen name. So, you know, I didn't know that Soap Opera Weekly was going to be such a success. I was working on, like, 12 soap opera magazines at the moment. And one of my old boyfriends came up with the name, which is a play, Marlena de la Croix, is a play on Paso La Croix. My middle name is Marlene, for real. And also I had interviewed Deirdre Hall, who gave me the worst time of my life the year before we started the column. So we just started. Who knew, you know? And it was never really a secret. It was never really a secret. But then we, you know, made a cartoon character out of her, and we had these fabulous illustrations, and it just kind of took off, you know? But everybody knew who it was. I, you know, it was no secret.
Did it make you an unfair target?
No. As a matter of fact, I never got credit for it, you know, because nobody knew it was, you know what I'm saying? I mean, a lot of the readers
exactly
didn't know. And
exactly.
You know, I can only think of a very handful of people who ever had the gall to target me, you know, because I am a journalist, you know, I am not a sycophant, and, you know, in that little Marlena de la Croix column wasn't just what I think, but it was about criticism, okay, and it was about professional criticism, and I think that was respected.
Yes, I remember you telling the story about being attacked by a Guiding Light producer, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it was a Guiding Light writer.
Okay. Over something that you had written in one of your columns, and you know he can go nameless, but
oh, that one. Okay, this is too. There's a Guiding Light writer who was actually a writer on the city, and I was attacked by her, and I was attacked by a producer of Guiding Light at a party, and that was pretty bad. it was very sad, very sad. You know, I tried to say the truth, and sometimes they didn't know the truth because they're sitting in their little offices, you know. I'm not saying I know all of the truth, but, you know, it doesn't occur to them what goes out on the air sometimes. It's very scary.
So tell me about your general memories of Guiding Light. You know, I've been watching this show since 1987, and that's long enough. But, I mean, you have an even longer history than that with this. What are your initial memories of watching this show?
Oh, so many. First of all, I was not a Guiding Light watcher when I watched soaps in the 70s. It was kind of like the Square show. And, you know, it was like middle America, and I was a hip New Yorker. But in 1980, when I started working for a magazine called Afternoon TV, and later I became its editor, there was a guy who worked for me named John Genovese, who was a critic. He was the first person who really helped me with criticism, and he was friendly with Doug Moreland, and that's all he would talk about was Doug Moreland and Guiding Light. And he kept saying, you have to watch this, you have to watch this, you have to watch this. And then I did, and I really, you know, I said, wow, this isn't such a square soap anyway, and it was really well done, really well done. So I started, like, 1980, which I think is a really, you know, so I knew it, I could see what happened in the last 10 years. And my memories don't start in 1980 because it's such a historic show. You know, those characters were on forever. So that's how I started. And, you know, and I've watched pretty much ever since then. You know, so there's a lot of different eras, a lot of changes, and I'm really sad that it's going.
Ultimately, why did Guiding Light have to go down in such an inglorious, ignominious way? I mean, you know, it could have happened. This could have happened to any of the remaining shows. There's no question about that.
Somebody could write their master's thesis on this someday, because I think it's a very long, involved story. I know that people like to, you know, blame people, blame this producer, this writer. I think it was death by a thousand cuts. Could I tell you where I think it started?
Absolutely.
Okay, this is just my opinion. I think it started in 1979, when Luke and Laura got to be big on General Hospital, and they just swept everybody away from this, you know, to watch General Hospital. And you have to remember that Guiding Light was in the same, you know, they were in the same time zone, so they were competing. And I think that a lot of people, especially young people, watched General Hospital, and then they stayed for 30 years, okay? You know, I have lots and lots of friends. I call them the Monty boys. You know, they worship Gloria Monty, and they're still waiting for Gloria Monty to come back.
To rise from the dead?
What? Well, no, that's, I respect her. I shouldn't have said that. Anyway, so, you know, they were really at a disadvantage, and they had to come up with something to rival General Hospital. And I think that all those people, that as all the years went by, it was an uphill battle from then. I mean, I think they had a lot of success in the Reba, Pam Long years, but I think that was the beginning. And you have to remember that every other soap in that time slot, which here in New York was 3 to 4, after, you know, failed. Okay, there was Texas. What else? There was
Santa Barbara,
Sunset Beach, Passions, right?
Port Charles.
Port Charles here in New York was on in a different time. I mean, it's on different times.
Okay, we got it in the afternoon, so.
Yeah.
We got it right after GH.
I'm saying General Hospital was always kind of like the almighty, and, you know, they gave Gloria Monty a piece of that show. In other words, a piece of the profits forever.
Uh-huh.
And she earned it. You know, people stay with soaps forever, so they really had an uphill fight. But that's when I think it started. Also, you know, GH was a young show, and Guiding Light was an old show.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they had to get young very fast, as all the soaps had to do. So,
and, you know, even though they were quite successful in bringing in younger characters, it was always... The perception of Guiding Light was always that it was the old fogey show.
Exactly. But I have to just add one thing, and put in a name that I don't think anybody's bringing up today, which is Doug Moreland. You know, Doug Moreland created Luke. He was there at the beginning of Luke, the Luke and Laura era, and he and Gloria had a big falling out. And where did he go right afterwards? He went to
right
Guiding Light.
Street. Yep.
And, you know, it was terrible because General Hospital became this huge success. And where was Douglas, the nicest man in the world and so talented? And he went to Guiding Light and he created Kelly and Nola and Morgan, which was their first really big, you know, triangle. And they did Nola's Fantasies, which were, you know, movie musicals. And, you know, he won an Emmy. And he also won, for me, from R Magazine, as I was the editor of Afternoon TV, he won an Afternoon TV award. And this is like my one little Douglas story. In that era, we used to give out these awards for my magazine, and we didn't have any money, and we did it on the sets, and we gave Douglas his award on the set of Guiding Light, and there were like 3 people watching, and he gave this acceptance speech, and he cried, you know? He loved the show. He loved the people. You know, and I really think that gave a new infusion into Guiding Light against General Hospital. Different times.
Why did Doug leave? Do we know? Was he fired or did he leave voluntarily?
What was the next show that he went to?
He went to As the World Turns, but I don't think he went
immediately. Did he go directly? No. He did What's the Loving.
He and Agnes created it together.
I had lunch with them. Could you believe it? Together in 1983, so they created Loving.
Okay.
Usually Doug went to another show when he didn't, you know, he was very vulnerable, like, and very creative, like, you know, many people we know, and he usually just moved on, you know, because he just didn't want to deal with all the craziness, and, you know, he was very lucky that he was able to do that because he was fantastic.
Absolutely.
And he did find happiness at As the World Turns, finally.
He found happiness, he found the respect of the entire community, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, he really, really got screwed by Gloria Monty, you know, so it's a little-known story, but important at the time.
You know, it's so great. MarlenaDelacroix.com, MarlenaDelacroix.com reprinted your classic 1992 column, Blueprint for Number One.
Mm-hmm.
If memory serves, you were the first critic in the soap press to declare how great this show had become.
Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, how could you not watch it at the time? I mean...
And, you know, at one point, I think the argument could be made that it was the most interesting, compelling show on television, regardless of the time slot.
Well, it was just, you know, a confluence. A confluence of writing and acting and producing. And it was just fabulous, you know. It was just so adult and intelligent. And, you know, I just knew that they had... You know, something wonderful. The storylines were exciting and heartfelt, and it was just wonderful. And that was before, you know, the decline of soap. So it was kind of like, you know, one of the last stands.
Yeah, it was the last bastion.
Yeah. So, you know, that's, and I wanted to explain. My whole thing is explaining things. You know, I don't like to say I like, I don't like, I like, I don't like. I like to explain it. And that was so easy to explain because it was so good.
What kind of reaction did you get from Blueprint after it ran?
I'm trying to think.
I mean, I know that Jill Phelps had a framed copy.
Yes. I went over to see her. I went over there, and she had a framed copy over her desk, and I was like, wow. Wow. You know, that was really exciting for me. And it really was a high point, you know, and I question why it had to go differently after that. I really do.
Well, you know, in retrospect, was the Blueprint faulty in some way?
No. It was okay for that time. You know, that period in time when there were still three TV networks and you could still do very serious, intelligent shows. It was good for that time. I think it would be good now, but I don't know if anybody would televise it because it was too good, too intelligent.
What did the show lose when Beverly McKenzie walked?
Oh.
Is it possible to calculate what they lost?
Beverly, you know... You know, I had watched her. She had played Iris on Another World in the 70s, and she was just magnificent. And there's no one else like her. For people who never saw her, she was magic. She was dry. She was witty. She was so vulnerable. She could do one scene and make you cry and laugh at the same time. And when she was on Guiding Light, she played a very similar role, which was she was the original Alexandra. She was Lou Jack's mother, Vincent Irizarry's mother. And she was, you know, kind of sort of involved with Roger Thorpe, who was Michael Baswell. I was like, who could ask for anything more? So, you know, I think it lost something. But the thing is, the show had a lot of other stuff. I don't want to diss her. She's the greatest. You know, I interviewed her later on. It was an honor and a privilege. And she is one of the all-time greats.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny that you mentioned Bev and Michael Zaslow because, you know, as great as they were on screen together, they didn't get along off screen.
Well, yeah, I understand. That happens a lot. That happens a lot. That happens a lot, a lot.
You know, this may not be a fair question for you, and if it isn't, just tell me. But in your view, did something change in Jill Farren Phelps in the wake of Beverly's departure? You know, from her subsequent comments to the press, it seemed as though Beverly took great delight in making Phelps look like a total fool, because it, you know, it appeared that Phelps hadn't even read her contract. And
well,
I'm just wondering if some of Phelps' incredible passion for Guiding Light kind of flickered after that.
You know, I really don't know. You know, I'll tell you why. Because Jill is like this monumental figure. You know, she's been the only person who's actually worked for 25 years straight in daytime, and she's very secretive, and she's very wily, and she likes you, she likes you, she hates you, and she's done both with me and everyone else in the world. But I think that Beverly really did zonk her that time. I think that Beverly really did, because, you know, she probably didn't know. I mean, I think it was true. I don't know if that was the end of her interest in Guiding Light. I really don't. I think that...
What's your sense, though? I mean, just what's your...
Where did she go after that? I can't remember. One Life? One Life, right?
No, she went to another world.
Oh, she went to another world.
Yeah.
She was
fired from Guiding Light in 95 and went immediately to another world. And
right.
Then, after she was taken off another world, she kind of laid low for a couple of years,
and then
she was hired as a consultant for ABC, and then they put her on One Life.
You know, I really don't know. She's very mysterious, very mysterious. She was talked about more than anyone. You know, it's funny because I interviewed her the first time on Santa Barbara, and I've, you know, seen her periodically, not recently, but, you know, I interviewed her through the years, and I always found her very mysterious. And also, you know, she's very, very talented and very controversial. And, you know, asked me about her. Somebody asked me yesterday how Jill could be so great on Guiding Light after they had read what I said, and so awful now on General Hospital. And I said, she's working for people. You know, in those days, she was working for Procter & Gamble. You know, now she's working for ABC. I don't know if she likes that kind of soap opera, but that's what she is asked to do.
Yeah.
No one is given artistic freedom. You know, in daytime, it's a collaborative medium, and I think that's what a lot of people forget. I'm not trying to defend her, but you have to remember that it's a business.
Absolutely.
You're only there as long as you make money for them.
And yet her contributions to this genre cannot be, you know, understated. I mean, the actors who have worked for her adore her.
They do, yeah. It's kind of a mixed bag. But as I said, I've interviewed her. I met her in 1983 in California. I used to call her the Babe in Black because she always wore black. And then, you know, I saw her at Guiding Light. And then when she was at Another World, she summoned me down there to see her police sets, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, she went to One Life and she killed my show. And I really laced into her. And that was the end of that. So who knows, you know? She's just a mystery. She's just a character like Paul Rausch. They're great, great, great daytime characters.
And isn't it funny that they've all been connected to this show? Paul Rausch, John Conboy, Jill.
Oh, everyone. But it's not just that. It's everyone. If you look
uh-huh.
down the cast list going back like 30 years, everyone has been on Guiding Light. It's really amazing, you know. Mary Stewart, who was the star search for Tomorrow for 100 years, she was on Guiding Light.
Yeah.
You know, Vincent Irizarry was on Guiding Light. Everyone was on Guiding Light. It's kind of like the mothership.
People like James Earl Jones. And
oh, yeah.
Kevin
well, that was
Bacon.
Before my time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That was before my time. I'm talking about people we see, you know, people, the soap stars that we know. You know, they've all been on Guiding Light.
So back to Alexandra just for a minute. Did Marge Doucet's utter triumph in that role kind of ease the sting a little bit of Beverly's, you know, sudden departure?
Well, you know, nobody could replace Beverly, okay? And, you know, Marge is great. And she's just different. And a lot of people like Marge. And also, she had been on Capital before as Myrna Clegg, and she was wonderful in that role. So she brought some fans to that show. So I don't think anybody stopped watching. But she wasn't Beverly.
Yeah.
And she's been there all, you know, look all the years. She's persisted
sure.
in being there.
Critical Condition, August 10th, 1993, Guiding Light, 6 Crises. I quote you. Although Emmy winner Ellen Parker was a bravura actress, I always thought Maureen was a real stick in the mud.
I could help her that.
She was never the heart of the show the way Burt Bauer was. Talk about killing off Maureen Bauer. In retrospect, was that a mistake?
Well, again, none of us were on the set, okay? I just was not. I know she's a really good actress, and I know she's done a lot of Broadway, but I just was not a fan of the character. I just thought she was kind of thorny, okay, and it was a shock. It was a real shock that she was killed off, and, you know, I think...
The outcry over that move from critics, from fans, was incredible, and it's clear that Jill Phelps and company weren't expecting that to be the case.
Well, that's what happens. You know, think of what happened when she killed off Frankie Frame on Another World so brutally, okay? You know, she just, you know, you're a producer, you have the power to do that, and... But in terms of, you know, I just wasn't a big fan of hers. She was not warm. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Burt Bauer was warm. She was mom. She was everything. And I just didn't think that, you know, that Ellen Parker was so wonderful. And I just said, well, if they killed her, they killed her. But, you know, everybody has an opinion.
Yeah.
I wrote that. See how he was very brave, don't you think? But the thing is, I wrote that before everybody else said, oh, we loved her. You know,
yeah,
I just was kind of like out there all the time. And I just, that was fun.
You were one of the few critics, if not the only one, who came out and said that it was a justified move story-wise.
That was the story where Lillian had breast cancer, right?
And then she and Ed had a fling.
She had a fling, and then
during the blackout, I think, wasn't it, or was it not?
Probably. Jill loved that kind of thing. The blackout was Jim Riley came up with the blackout, by the way, and then everybody has done blackout since then. What happened? I don't remember exactly what happened. She got run over by a car, right?
No, she. Lillian wrote her a letter.
Uh huh.
And Maureen read it, and then she went up to the Bauer cabin, and then Ed followed her up there.
Uh-huh.
They had a big blowout, and then Maureen left to drive back home, and her car slipped on some ice on a bridge and went over the bridge. And
how convenient, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, it upped the stakes for Lillian, and, you know, Creed is fantastic. Peter Simon is an amazing actor.
He's just brilliant.
And it created fabulous stuff for him, you know, no matter what the politics are. But a lot of people just thought that to kill off a Bauer was wrong because there were very few Bauers left at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bauers were the founding family. And also Ellen Dolan, who was on As the World Turns now, who plays Margo, was the original.
Yes.
And I liked her a lot better.
You know, the popular opinion is that the show never recovered from that.
I don't think that's it.
The internal dynamic of the show was never the same after that. And, you know, if you consider, and, you know, I take what you say that she was never mom, but, you know, if you consider that no one ever stepped into that role of Earth Mother after Maureen was gone, is there something to that idea or no?
No, it's a very simplistic explanation because, as I said, Guiding Light died by a thousand cuts. That was one of them. I mean, there were so many others. That was just one. You know, I could talk about that. You know, the television. Everything changed when cable came in, okay? Everything changed. And it's not when you kill off one character, it kills the show.
Yeah.
There are a lot of different factors. The corporation of P&G, the way the show is managed, the way the show is publicized. It's not just story. You know, when Luke and Laura got to be famous, the reason they were famous was not because it was only a good story. It was because ABC had the best and most professional public relations team in the world, and they really sold that story big time.
Yeah.
So there's always a lot of factors involved, and I think that's a mistake to always ascribe it to one little thing, and especially with Guiding Light.
Talk about Justin Deese. You know, his greatness is beyond dispute, but when he came to Guiding Light, the entire show seemed to revolve around him for a time.
Well, you know, Justin was one of Jill's great favorites. He had been on Santa Barbara.
Sure.
He played Keith Timmons, who was absolutely nuts, DA. And I remember when he came to Guiding Light because, you know, he came in and, you know, they thought he was dead, and he was Harley's father, which is a wonderful role. And he's just really great. You know, he's a fantastic actor. I mean, I didn't write about Guiding Light this year very much, and I wrote one column, and it was about Justin Deese. Because he's really, you know, he is worth the six Emmys, I think. I just read an interview that my friend Michael Logan did with him where, you know, it's fantastic. It's on TV. I can't believe I'm touting another, you know, but Logan and I have known each other for 30 years. But it's a really great interview on TV Guide with Justin Deese. He's a good actor. He's a character. He is just like a genius, and we're lucky to have him, or were lucky to have him.
You know, he's one of the few actors on that show that has been able to completely transcend the ridiculousness of their new production model this year.
Yeah, I think, I haven't watched a lot of it, but, you know, good acting can do that. Acting is a skill.
I mean, watching his performances during the whole thing with Coop's death.
That's right. I wrote about that too.
It was unbelievable what he managed to pull off.
I wrote a column about that, and I said I can't believe, you know, that was when Philip was coming back, and I wrote this column like, you know, because they had advertised Philip was coming back, and I wrote this column saying, you know, with all due respect to Grant Alexander, who was a great actor, they should have, you know, why put all the money into him when Justin Deese just wiped the floor with everyone, and so many people were angry, but it was true. They should have advertised him, but he wants to interview, so I guess that might have been part of it. Usually. He only did Michael, because Michael did a great interview with him about 25 years ago, which I remembered and wrote about recently. But, you know, I'm really, you know, when the show goes off, I can't see him on a soap again. Can you?
Oh, no. No.
You never know. You never know. But he's somebody I'm really upset about losing. I met him. You know, I've talked to him. And, you know, he was, you know, Justin Dees. I was there during the 7th Street fire. Do you remember that? With
yes.
Elaney.
Uh-huh.
They had us go up to the studio, and they did the fire, and he was there. And I was interviewing him, like, between acts. And what happened was they set the fire, and then they couldn't put it out. So they had to throw everybody out of the studio. So I was talking to Justin Dees in the street. You know, and I was nervous. He was kind of, you know, he was interesting. He's just like an interesting, you know, he's a very New York guy, even though I don't think he's from New York. He's very opinionated, but he's very shy, too. Very shy.
You know, back in 95, a lot of people said that he stole Brad Maul's Emmy, the Emmy that Brad Maul, you know, deserved for.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't, well, you know, he had nothing to do with it. He just was up there.
Absolutely.
But Brad Maul was fabulous.
He earned that Emmy for those performances during that fire.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Definitely. But Brad Maul was wonderful. You know, that's why I hate Emmys and all that. No, it's really hard to compare them. And, you know, I feel bad for Brad Maul. He worked his heart out, and he had to go home to Texas, you know. It's so sad.
So talk about the Megan McTavish, Michael Lipson years. You know, you were initially very... you were initially very supportive of their time on the show, but then it all evolved into plot-driven madness.
Well, you know, that's it's not, again, I knew Megan, okay? She was working on All My Children. Well, she was like Agnes's, had trained her, and I knew her.
Uh-huh.
And I had interviewed her, and she went to Guiding Light. And, you know, so I knew her, so I watched it. She was fine on All My Children, and all of a sudden, you know, the plots just got really stupid, and I came up with this analogy that, and you could see this on other soaps since then. This was like 96, 97 when the ratings started to really go down on all the soaps. You know, in order to get the audience back, they decided that you have to beat the drum. In other words, you know, have big plots that make a lot of noise, like you're seeing on the ABC shows now. So she started writing all these really empty, gimmicky plots, and I couldn't understand this because, you know, I had known her, and I knew she was okay, and, you know, so I just decided to hell with this. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to turn on her. I'm going to write the truth. And I wrote this thing called The Hollow Drum.
Yes.
That's funny because all drums are hollow. But, and I wrote this thing, and, oh, my God, everybody went nuts. People went nuts, especially her. I didn't hear from her, but I did in a kind of a roundabout way. But it was the truth. I'm sorry. You know, but that was, if you look back on it, if you look at the history of daytime going down, that was around the time. She just
yes.
kind of took the bull by the horns. And now, I don't know if you've seen her, if you go to, she has a website. She lives in like the biggest house in Connecticut. So she made lots of dough.
You know, when she came to the show, they put a poor actor by the name of Frank Beatty through an emotional ringer trying to pump up Buzz for the show. And it worked in the short term, but did it damage them in the long term, in your opinion?
Do I have to tell that story? All right, I interviewed. Frank Beatty came in as, who did he play?
He was Brent Lawrence.
Brent. It was the first real gimmick story. We've
and
had
he,
a lot since then.
He
yeah.
raped Alan Michaels' wife, Lucy, and then he was supposedly
Lucy.
Killed and then came back from the dead.
And he came back. Okay, he was a man, right? And he
yes.
came back as a woman.
Yes.
This is my best story ever.
To torment Lucy.
Yes, okay.
And, you know, it was a great buzzworthy plot. It got them a lot of attention, but...
Well, also gave him a nervous breakdown. I interviewed him. I guess it was when he first came on the show, and I thought he was really nice, you know, and really sweet. And, you know, I didn't know what happened, you know, like when he left and he came back. And years later, I did hear that they had actually sent him to a school to learn how to be like a woman. You know, there's a school in New York where, you know, I think a lot of like transgender people go.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Miss Veronica something. And they had sent him. I mean, they really took a lot of time with him to teach him, you know, how to do the story. And then, you know, all of a sudden he was gone. And when he came back as a woman, it was shocking. It was really, really shocking. But there's a real reason why it was really, really shocking. You know what that is?
Yes, I do.
And why don't you say it? Because I'm not going to say it. See, I publicized this story, yes.
Well, the rumor was, and I don't know that it's ever been confirmed, but the rumor was that they dressed him up to make him look like Jill Farren Phelps, who had just been fired from the Guiding Light executive producer position. And so it was basically, it all amounted to a big in-house kind of vent.
I can confirm that because it was told to me by a head writer we all know and love. That's so shocking to me. I didn't recognize her when they had it, but I felt, you know, it was a funny joke, but I felt so sorry for him because, you know, where is he? What has he done? He was so nice.
You know, I mean, they put him through a real ringer, and, you know, I understand that when the role was done, he was so exhausted that he just had to drop out for a time and just, you know, completely decompress.
Well, it's such a horrible, don't you think it's a horrible story? All around, you know, it really is horrible.
You know, if you're not connected to it, it's hilarious. But if you know all the backstory and all the players, it's horrifyingly cruel.
Well, yeah, especially this poor actor, you know. I mean, everybody else had been in daytime forever, and he was new, you know. And I can't believe they got away with it.
And, you know, I mean, he did a great job. He got an Emmy nomination, you know, but that's not enough in the
It's a real sad footnote in soap history. Really sad. You know, and I just happened to find out about it because I knew the head writer at the time, and he told me about it. So, because I didn't recognize her I didn't recognize her as being Jill at the time. So I found out maybe 2 or 3 years later.
Wow.
And now I've told other people.
So, talk about Michael Zaslow's departure from the show. You know, it was, and the way that he was.
Oh, no. Well, I wasn't.
Talk about another incalculable loss.
Well, Zaslow was amazing. If you ever want to have a real laugh about Rent's movie called You Light Up My Life, you know, that song, it was based on a movie. He's the lead in it. I actually saw it. It's one of the worst movies of all time.
With Dee Dee Khan.
Yes, and he's the male lead. He's the male lead. Okay. Zaslow was, I guess, I only had one little encounter with him. You know, I don't think he was the most pleasant person, but he's a fantastic actor, and he made that show go. You know, he helped make that show go.
Uh-huh.
And let's see, his departure was another ugly story from Time, and, you know, you should probably talk to Michael Logan about that because he is the one that did the story on it. I was not involved in the story. You know, that Michael, of course, had ALS, and I think that the show didn't want to continue with him. And, of course, One Life to Live, you mainly picked him up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was a really ugly, ugly time because I think Mary Alice Dwyer Dobbin, who I knew,
mm-hmm.
made some kind of a not very nice remark when she Michael interviewed her, and she was forever branded awful. And I knew her, and it was very uncharacteristic of her. I don't remember exactly what she said, but, again, it was, you know.
Yeah, it was something to the effect of that they couldn't have a Roger on their canvas who was a weazened old man. You know, he needed to be strong and sexual.
It's so weird to me because, you know, she's not. I just knew her, and she doesn't seem like the kind of person that would say something like that. But obviously, if Michael went ahead with it, she said it. So, it didn't help her. And again, it's ugliness. You know, it's ugliness.
Yeah. Could it have been one of those times where, you know, they had an hour long conversation, and he just picked that one quote out, or
Michael's a good journalist. Maybe. I mean, it's pretty shocking. As I said, you'd have to ask him. He has all the insight on this one.
But just talk about in general what his loss did to the canvas. I mean, there was a hole in that canvas that, you know, never got filled in the same way that Beverly's hole never got filled and Maureen's hole never got filled.
Well, you know, I don't think there was a big supervillain, you know, after him. I mean, Alan Spaulding, and I wanted to talk about the first Alan Spaulding because that was before your time, and I remember him well, Chris Bernow. You know, you always knew a villain, and I think that, you know, even though Ron Raines was, you know, came on and was great, you know, there was only, you know, they had two villains at once, you know, and they only, and it was, he was definitely missed, you know, and I don't think there was a big villain after that. Do you?
Oh, no, unquestionably.
You know, and he wasn't just a villain. He was just really messed up psychologically, and that's why Michael played him, and it really worked. He wasn't just like, you know, Stefano Damara, I'll get you. You know, he was a messed up person.
Uh-huh.
And it was that's a real tragedy, real tragedy.
Okay, I'm going to quote you again. Critical condition, February 10th, 1997. Guiding light, changes. no matter how good Guiding Light may become under the new management of Paul Roush, I'm
yes.
not watching it if it becomes the Riva in a Red Dress show again.
Oh, well.
Talk about Riva. You know, not so much lately, but back in the day, you were very vocal and very blunt about your lack of affection for the one and only Riva Shayne.
I've grown up a little.
I think Kim took your criticisms personally.
I think so, too. But,
you know,
I don't know. You're going to have Pam later, okay?
Yes, I'm having Pam Long on my show tonight. And
yeah,
I'll
tell you my Pam Long story. But my lack of affection for Riva was, and again, you know, when you're a critic, especially in soaps, you have to separate yourself from the character. And I didn't, you know. She just wasn't my kind of gal, you know. She was crass and big-mouthed and, you know, slutty and, you know, and I just didn't like her. And I think you weren't, you know, I think there was a part where you were not supposed to like her. You know, and what? In the beginning. She married everybody. And I think personally I didn't like her. And I couldn't stand the fact that she was on all the time, especially, I guess, in the beginning of Paul. I had forgotten I had written that. And, but, you know, over the years, you know, Kim, you know, when she, her spirit is one of the things that kept that show going. And even though I still don't like Riva very much, you know, she has a huge part in that show's history. She just wasn't my kind of, she wasn't Vicky to me, like One Life to Live. But, you know, that's the thing that a lot of people don't get. If you do self-criticism, you have to separate yourself, and that's hard to do.
Uh-huh. You know, as you said, I'm having Pam Long on my show tonight, and I'll wager that a good measure of our conversation will focus on Riva because she is Pam's most famous creation, without question.
Well, yes. Yes, she was. But I knew Pam before she was on Guiding Light.
Tell me your Pam Long story.
You'll love this. I was an editor of this magazine called Afternoon TV, which was a monthly, and we had all these color pages, and we were always looking at ways to fill them. This must have been about 1982 or so. So NBC, which had tons and tons of money, decided that we would all go out on a boat one day, myself, my assistant, and this new actress named Pamela K. Long, who had been Miss Alabama in the Miss America contest. Okay, and
okay.
we would do what they say in the old days they would never do now, called cheesecake pictures. You know what those are?
No, tell me.
Cheesecake pictures is like when a girl, in the old days, because it's very, you know, sexist now, but, you know, when somebody like Pam, who was young and beautiful, would pose in a bathing suit. So we took her out. It was a beautiful day in New York, and NBC paid for the boat. Think about it. They can't even pay for coffee now. And they took us out on the boat, and Pam, like, was in a bathing suit, and she was doing all these poses, and I was saying, oh, my God, how did I get into this, you know? And it was fun, and little did we know that Pam would go on to Guiding Light and, you know, become this great head writer. At that point, she was playing this character named Ashley on Texas, and she basically took over the show, and who knew? Who knew? But I remember Pammy and her cheesecake days. And I have great respect for her because she did a really great job on Guiding Light, I thought. I mean, Riva is not my gal, but she did it. She brought real passion to that show. She's kind of,
sure.
Riva's kind of like a cut-rate Scarlett O'Hara to me.
You know, talk about that for a minute. Is Kim Zimmer's place in daytime history because she's such a great actress who can play anything, or because Riva was a great character?
No, because Kim had other roles before Riva. She was on The Doctor. She played Nola. She played Echo Di Savoy on One Life, and I think that's probably how she will be remembered, you know, but, you know, who knows? It might not be over yet. Maybe somebody else is going to hire her. You never know.
You know, she's a marquee name. There's no question about it.
Right, definitely, and, you know, historically, as you know, with Linda Dano, they like to bring people from canceled shows onto other shows to get
mm-hmm.
their audience.
Talk about The Clone. Was that the beginning of the end of this show, or that ridiculous storyline?
Paul, the whole era when Paul was there was very divisive, okay? Because the ratings were going down. It was that slide, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Guiding Light was a very traditional show, and they wanted to do something to beat the drum, so they came up with this clone thing. They also had the worst head writers in history, Brown and Essenston. The worst! The most talentless. The rudest, and I guess they came up with this story, and I just thought it was utter, it didn't belong on Guiding Light, it had nothing to do with Guiding Light, it was stupid, I just hated it, but there were people like people at my magazine loved it. Okay, so there was like this war.
You know, a fair number of critics and fans loved it, too. I mean, you know, you were immediately out front and criticizing it immediately.
Well, it doesn't go on Guiding Line. It's not Star Trek, you know. And at the time, the only thing that had been cloned was a sheep named Dolly, and they named her Dolly. So I just thought it was just insane. It was insane. Especially, she got younger, she got older. Oh, it was just ridiculous. Why can't they just do a twin story? Why do they have to make it the clone? You know, it was just insulting. But you see, they were trying to beat the drum for higher ratings, just like they do today.
So was that the beginning of the end, or did they recover from it okay?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if the clone story did it, but I think that the ratings just kept going down, down, down. And, you know, at that point, they had brought in all the people from ABC to run the show. Mickey was at Procter & Gamble, and my friend Rhody Rosenzweig, who was the publicist at One Life to Live, they named Rhody after her. She came to the social day, all the ABC people there, and even they could not lift this show. No, it's sad. It really is sad because people love that show. They love that show. I had a group of fan friends, you know, who I'm still friendly with. We used to meet online and intelligent fans, and it was really painful to watch, like, The Clone and things after that, you know. Definitely, definitely painful. Again, it wasn't all the show. It was the show in response to what was happening. And you know, and I was up to see Paul several times during that era, and it was a very strange era.
How should Ellen Wheeler feel about her time at Guiding Light? I mean, yes, the show died on her watch, but she still accomplished some truly magnificent things in her five-year tenure as executive producer. And, you know, given the constraints that she and that cast have had to work under, it's pretty miraculous that any good work was able to be done there.
Yeah, considering they had no money.
Sure.
Considering, you know.
No money, no sets, no anything.
No nothing, yeah. I don't know, you know, I think that, you know, the jury will be out on Ellen for a long time. I first interviewed her when she came onto Another World in, like, 1983 when she was dating Tom Eplin. That was a long time ago. And she's been in daytime as long as I have. So, you know, she's had a long career. And, you know, as I said, I have not seen her. You know, I know that a lot of the other bloggers have seen her. But, you know, she put everything she had into it. The only thing that bothered me is, did you see 60 Minutes? This week?
I did. I was going to ask you about that next. I was going to...
Well, I hated it, but before I tell you what I hated about it, Ellen Wheeler cried on 60 Minutes. You know, she is an executive producer of a television show. You know, like, there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in being an executive producer. Oh, I look like a bunch of idiots. No, seriously, I thought it was really bad. You know, like, they were laughing at soap operas anyway in that piece. You know, to have the producer come on and cry, give me a break. You know, it's like having your doctor cry or a lawyer cry.
Talk to me about that. You know, this isn't an exact quote, so I'm sorry, Ellen, but one of the things she said on that 60 Minutes piece was something to the extent of, you know, when we do something good, we don't have time to congratulate ourselves, and when we do something bad, we don't have time to fret about it. Doesn't that just back up my assertion the last time we spoke on this show that the main goal in daytime right now is just to get something on the air, regardless of its quality?
Oh, you can't ask for anything sadder. You really can't. You can't ask for anything more sad. You know, really, I mean, when you look at the quality of 1992 and you compare it to now,
damn
plus,
right,
you know, all the production values have gone down the drain. I mean, you know, I had a friend gave me a call last night, somebody who loves soaps, has watched them since like 1960, and he's a production executive of PBS, and he's like, he loves soaps, and he's like Marlena's best pal, and he called me and he hadn't watched Guiding Light since the new production model came in, and this is a kind, wonderful man, and he went, hair, the makeup, you know, Guiding Light should have stayed on radio. How did they put that on the air, you know? And I mean, he just went on and on and on for like an hour. And I said, it's been on for a year and a half. You know, and I'm not a fan of the new production model myself, which is one of the reasons I never wrote about it.
Critical condition, July 20th, 1999. It's not only a soap, Wasn't the amount of publicity the last episode of Another World evoked startling? All those stories on Another World's cancellation in newspapers, on radio, on TV. Marlena humbly asks, why does the mainstream press pay more attention to the death of a soap than it ever does to the life of one?
So I don't remember writing that. That's so bizarre. Well,
no,
I'll tell you why, because I'm teaching.
Well, you know, you've written for and have been a prestigious member of the mainstream press for most of your entire professional life.
Oh, yeah.
So
uh-huh.
Answer your own question.
Well, now I am a journalism professor, and tomorrow I'm teaching a class on what makes news. And, you know, what makes news is something that's unusual or unique or people can't believe or they think is strange or weird. And, you know, a soap opera that runs for 35 years or 73 years that gets canceled, that's weird, okay? It's a story. It's a good story because people go, ha-ha. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Or people like you and I cry. So it's a very good story. But, you know, the same thing with Guiding Light. It just angered me how many stories there have been on Guiding Light's cancellation. I wrote this months ago, months and months and months ago. Where are the stories in the mainstream press now when we need them?
Yes.
But, you know, the press is not our cheerleader. They're, you know, they just cover the news. And,
sure.
You know, there is someone called a press person at Guiding Light who goes out and gets these stories and plants them.
And so what has happened to that? What has happened to that way of thinking? You know, I remember when Linda Gottlieb took over One Life to Live, and she got her machine working full force to promote that show.
Well, yes.
What happened to that way of thinking?
Well, Linda Gottlieb was a different story because she had never been in the industry, and she came from Hollywood. She was a Hollywood producer and wanted to publicize it as a movie, okay? And she came in and said, oh, I'm better than anybody else in daytime, and she made an enemy out of yours truly. And there was a huge fight that went on for about 3 years, okay, which ended in a draw and a friendship. But, you know, and she also had an excellent publicist who was Rody Rosenzweig, who was a brilliant publicist who I worked with, and she was very smart, and they decided to try other things that had never been tried in soap. So that's why they got so much publicity, but it's for the life of the soap, not for the death of the soap. She had a really good publicist, and she staged things that were really great. That AIDS quilt was the best thing I ever saw in daytime.
Yeah. Just,
you know, she really, you know, I mean, I really had problems with her personally, but, you know, she was Hollywood, you know, and she had never been in daytime before, and I think that pretty much, like, sums it up.
Critical condition, June 29th, 1999. Last episodes always make me cry.
Did I write that?
Yes, you did.
Oh, I didn't know that. What did I say? Which shows did I write about? I don't remember that one.
You wrote about the end of Another World.
Mm-hmm.
Last episodes of canceled daytime soaps are invariably sad events because most of the time it is very much the culmination of a long life. You know,
yep.
nothing could be truer here. So tell me about Connie Heyman and what the final episode of Guiding Light is going to make her do.
Well, I was watching a little bit this week, and it's interesting to me because the place they had that wedding is, my husband and I have been looking for a house in that area, and we know that area in Lake Mohawk in New Jersey very well. And it makes me want to buy a house. But, you know, I saw the wedding, the double wedding, and I was touched. But then, you know, I hadn't watched the show in a while, and it was like Lillian and Buzz, you know. But then they had Tina Sloan doing at Maureen's gravesite, and that was just brilliant. I will cry. I'm sure they will write something that will evoke tears. You know, everybody who was on that show has worked on it, and it means a lot to everyone, you know. And they are just as, you know, I always cry. I mean, it's just too much for me. I mean, you spend so much time with all these people for all these years, and, you know, it's just, you know, a heartbreak. And I think that Friday will be a heartbreak for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Did you see it yesterday?
What happened yesterday? I think I was in class.
Somebody died yesterday.
Oh, yes! Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to scream in your ear. I didn't see it, but I heard about it, and
no,
I watched today.
That was stunning to me because I haven't read any of the spoilers for this week, and I have no idea what's going to happen. And that
well, you see how great stuff are without spoilers? You know, I've been campaigning for that for a long time when I first started. No, when you're surprised, it makes a soap 100 times better. And I want to put money on the fact that they're going to have an Italian kiss on the last episode. I really do think they're going to do it. I hope they do it. They ought to do it. They should do it, and I hope they will. But killing Alan, I was surprised. See, isn't surprise a great emotion?
Oh, it was stunning. I mean, it was
well,
like
that's what's also like every day in the old days before spoilers.
It was like a gut punch, the way it would be in real life. It was exactly the same.
Well, that's what folks used to have, but they don't have anymore. Imagine having that every other day, every week. Pretty powerful, huh?
It was, I mean, it was truly unbelievable, truly.
Uh-huh.
And,
well,
you know, I've read all the spoilers for all the other soaps that I watch, and so, you know, I know what's coming. But I, for some reason, I hadn't read any this week about the final week of Guiding Light, and it was just unbelievable.
Well, you know, I remember this is the one thing Mimi would never let me write. Spoilers spoil soaps, you know. And she said, well, we're making money yet doing it. But it's true, they spoil soaps. So wasn't it really much better not to know?
Yes, it was. I mean, it was, like I said, it was a gut punch, just the way it would be in real life.
Yeah, Alan, what a character. Could I just say one thing about the original Alan Spaulding before Ron? I like Ron. Ron is great. But the original Alan Spaulding, Chris Bernow, who died in about 1989, he was the sexy, he was like an older gentleman. He was like 45.
Uh-huh.
And he was not great looking, and he was an amazing actor. He was so sexy, and it had nothing to do with his look. No, I'm serious. It was all about his sex appeal, and he was amazing, amazing. He, at the same time he was on Guiding Light, he was playing Dracula downtown in an off-Broadway show. And, you know, he came when the Spauldings came in, he married the daughter of the Bowers, Hope Bower. So that kind of cemented the two families for the first time.
Okay.
But then Alan went out and had an affair with this woman named Rita Bower, who was married to Ed. And, you know, they had their adultery in this location they did in Jamaica, which I could tell you about. And it was the hottest thing I've ever seen on soaps. And everybody had their clothes on. It was all acting. It was all acting. And Chris Bernow was a fantastic actor, and he died too young.
So take Guiding Light at its pinnacle. Decide whatever its pinnacle was, and just take that, and tell me where you would rank Guiding Light at its pinnacle in the annals of soap history. I mean, take late 60s, Another World, take classic Marland, As the World Turns, take Claire Levine's GH Years, take classic Malone on One Life to Live. Where would you rank Guiding Light's pinnacle in that lineup, in that list?
Well, you have to understand that I started watching in 1980. That show started in 1937, and I think a lot of people are not remembering back, like, before they watched the show. So I don't know. You know, there might have been something between 1937 and 1980 that I didn't see. So I just wanted to clarify that when people look back, it's not only your time watching, you know.
Sure.
But I don't know where I would rank it.
Just for you, just for your own personal amusement. I mean,
well, my favorite story of all time was Alice, Rachel, and Steve on Another World in 1969, you know, and I love that. And, you know, nobody remembers that except for Agnes, who wrote it. It's hard. I'm not into ranking, but I would say Guiding Light would be, you know, number two or three,
wow.
Three or four. You know, I never thought about it all. There have been so many stories.
Well, I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but, you know, I mean, you've made a great living talking about, you know, the greatness of soap's past, and so I was just wondering, you know, just for my own personal amusement, I was wondering where you would put Guiding Light's best.
What do you mean, in a number, or?
No, just in terms of the best of daytime as a whole, where Guiding Light
it's
would
all be. Opinion, you know, it's all opinion, you know, some people think General Hospital is the greatest, some people think Another World is the greatest, you know, it's whatever you think is the greatest, you know, personally for me, I always thought that All My Children was the greatest, but not now. You know, All My Children in the 70s and 80s, I loved. I absolutely loved.
Uh-huh.
You know, but there are other things I loved. I loved Bold and Beautiful in the beginning. I loved all the ones you just know, you know, mentioned. Claire, you know, General Hospital. I mean, these are riches. We should celebrate them all.
Absolutely. So how did you know that I was going to ask you about All My Children next?
Oh, I didn't.
Talk about the other soaps that have been on this summer. You know, your beloved All My Children continues sinking into a vat of utter...
It's not my beloved All My Children anymore. I can't even watch it. I just... No, I'm serious. It's, you know, I just... It's like another... As I said, you know, it's like another soap. It's not my soap. And I feel bad for the actors. And moving to California, I think, is the dumbest thing they could ever do. And I'm probably the only person that feels that way. Because All My Children has always... like, fed off of a New York locale. It's a, you know, it was a New York show. It was a smart show. It was a character show. And to move to California, I mean, I'm not trying to insult my friends in California, but, you know, it's kind of a show that's like Agnes, who was, like, very smart and funny. You know, she's of, even though she's from Nashville and lives in Pennsylvania, she is of Manhattan and has an apartment in Manhattan. And All My Children, to me, is not Melrose Place.
Well, you know, in talking about New York, I mean, if you think back on all the great, you know, character actors that have gone through the All My Children stage over the years, filling out their character parts.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
I know. I did a big story. If anybody wants to read about it, it's www.theatermania.com. I did a huge story on Theater Mania about all the, you know, the Broadway people who came in because they could, you know, because they can come through for a day, like Chip Zian or hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. All My Children always had a great, fantastic casting director. Fantastic.
And now with Guiding Light going off the air and All My Children going west and, you know, rumors about As the World Turns shaky future, there may just be one soap left in New York when the dust settles.
It's nauseating. It really is. You know, it's, you know, the day I got my new dog, Nigel Bartholomew Smythe, I took him out to walk, and there's a guy who never spoke to me for 20 years, and he saw my dog, and he told me he was an ABC, you know, guy who was in my building, he's an ABC stagehand, and he told me all the good stuff about, you know, going to California and why they did it, and you know, and they're putting a lot of people out of work. And I'm not just talking about, you know, they're putting like 400 people out of work. That's a tragedy.
It's
in New York. It really is. It's really sad. You know, and One Life to Live is here too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's really bad for New York, and I think it's really bad for the South. You know, New York is a character, and it's involved in a lot of the soaps, if not, you know, if not outwardly, then subliminally. You know, it's not involved in Bold and Beautiful, but, you know, I think that, you know, same thing with As the World Turns, and, you know, they had great New York actors too.
Uh-huh.
Always. You know, and I think it's very sad to desert New York at this point for everyone.
So my friend Joanne is in the chat room. She hosts Stardust Radio on this network, and
She's
asking you to pull out your crystal ball and predict what the worst thing could be that'll happen from this move.
Well, the New York?
Yeah, no, the All My Children move west. What's the worst thing that could happen from this?
It'll become Days of Our Lives. I'm not a Days fan. You know, to me, like, Days is kind of bland, and I don't know, to me, All My Children, even the worst writers, had more of like a hip, sophisticated edge, even with the bad writers. So, I think that's the word. It could become Days or Melrose Place or Charlie's Angels or,
it's well,
know,
on its way.
What?
It's well on its way.
It's well on its way. Yeah, I think that's it. And I feel bad for all the really good actors on that show.
So what was your favorite show this summer? What was the
none.
Was the one that you...
None. I kind of took the summer off because, you know, I think the two shows that everybody was watching this summer was Young and Restless and One Life. And which one do you want me to talk about?
Both.
Well, where do you want to start?
I don't know. We're talking about ABC. Let's go with One Life.
Well, One Life is entertaining. You know, I have, like, really severe problems with One Life, certain aspects of it. And at least you could watch it, and it's entertaining. You know, they're still writing kind of classic soaps and, you know, what happened this summer? They brought on that wonderful girl, Destiny, and what else did they do this summer? I can't even remember. What were their big plots?
Oh, they have the undercover drug thing.
Oh, I didn't like the end of that, but, you know, I like Kish. I think Kish is great.
Yeah, you know, that has the potential to be a really great story. I mean,
no, I think it's really well-written and well-acted.
As we talked about last time, it's kind of islanded unto itself right now, and they need to work on that. Definitely.
I agree with you.
But it's got the potential to be a really great, fascinating story.
Mm-hmm. And then we have The Blight of Stacy and her new friend. What's her friend's name, the girl from Gossip Girl? I don't remember.
Kim.
Oh, man. They should be, like, on a poster in Times Square, ashamed to be women. No, it really bothers me. They are, like, the lowest of the low. You know, you don't understand this. Agnes, Claire, everyone worked for years to make women intelligent and respectable on daytime, and they bring on these bimbos. You know, plotting how to get pregnant. I mean, come on. It's not funny. It's tragic. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't mean to you know, I just, if you know soap history, it's like the ultimate rebuke.
It's like, you know, 50 years of history gone out the window.
That's right.
Yeah.
Lots of cleavage. they are just beyond, and they're not even good bad, you know. Like, sometimes, like, they have bad people who are so bad, they're good. They're just bad. No, I'm serious. You know, in the beginning, I'm trying to think of people who were so good, so bad they were good. But, I can't think of anyone, but that's them. They are just bad. They are just an insult.
Talk about your beloved Brody being impaled. You were completely verklempt over the fact that they were going to...
Well,
you know,
come on. What is this, a gladiator movie? I mean, come on. No, impaled on daytime? You know, I mean, you know, why would they do that? You know, why would they... I know they want to, you know, create something sensational, and they probably have, you know, long-term consequences, but impaled? You know, and then, you know, I thought there were all kinds of undertones to that story. And, like, I didn't really think I even liked Brody all that much. You know, he has this little sparkle. I think he appeals to everyone. You know what I mean? And impalement? I mean, how sick can you get? It's just really, it's just like, I don't want to watch this anymore. What are they going to do, like, behead people next? On camera? With a guillotine? Think about it. It could happen.
You know, talk to me about Mark Lawson. He's not the best actor in the world, but I think
he's got a quality. He's got a great quality.
He's such a great character. And, you know, he's kind of a guy's guy, but he's also capable of, you know, great emotion and great sensitivity. It's kind of the best of all worlds with him.
Well, they wrote him a good character. They picked up on his personal strengths, I think, and they've made him almost angelic, as I wrote. You know, and of course he's, you know, but that was just, oh, you know, you just can't. Anyway, okay, next question.
You know, in that whole baby switch mess that played out earlier this summer, his was the performance that really got to me. You know, when they had left with the baby and Jessica was upstairs in the nursery kind of
uh-huh.
on the floor crying and he just walked in.
That was very nice. Yes, I hated that story because I've seen like 153 baby switch stories, and, you know, including the first one, which was On One Left to Live with Karen and Marco and stuff. And I don't like that story because I've seen it so many times, but I thought that was, you hit that one. That's exactly it. You're very, very, that's right. He was very good. He has a real tenderness and a soulfulness, and I think that shows through, and that's going to take him far, I think.
But he's also a guy's guy. I mean, he's a Navy SEAL, for crying out loud.
I love daytime, you know. That's the best thing. No, you always meet these new actors every year, and it's just so refreshing. You know, it's just so interesting, you know, the kind of people that you see and meet and you know, get to interview or, you know, who knew? Who knew?
And how about Y&R? Are you disturbed about where that's headed?
Well, yes. Because, you know, and I've been promising my readers that I would write about Y&R, and I keep putting it off because, you know, I liked it pretty much during the summer. And, you know, I know Paul, so I knew Paul, I know his everything he does, and I saw everything he did. And then one day I'm watching, and they kill Zapato, the dog. And this is the same week that my husband, Moose, and I got a dog named
yes.
Nigel Bartholomew Swice. And even if we didn't get Nigel that week, it was just a coincidence. How far could daytime go but to poison a dog? I'm not a prude, but that's really low, don't you think?
You know, I mean, it's one of those things you don't put children in jeopardy, you kill pets, you know, it's one of those kind of unwritten rules of daytime, I think.
Well, all those rules are being broken right and left now, you know. I mean, you know, you don't put children in jeopardy. You know, when I wrote that I didn't want Michael to get shot on Central Hospital, I got like 2,000 letters saying, well, why not? It's no big deal. It's just like prime time. But killing a dog, I mean, that's what I'm saying. So they started to really kind of pushing it, I think. And this Patty or Stacy, I mean, she's, you know, they're just trying to make her the big, you know, new star of the show. And I want to see how far they're going to go. It's scary. Isn't she going to kill someone this week?
Something big is happening on September 17th. Was it tomorrow?
That's tomorrow.
Something big
yes.
supposed to happen tomorrow. I mean, I'm
well,
not sure exactly what.
Yeah, I saw some scenes during the week where she was holding Colleen hostage in the forest, and it was revolting. But, you know, people think that this sells soap. I don't think so. But, you know, this is what they do.
So where is the Ashley Adams story headed?
Oh, I don't know. I really don't know. I have no idea.
Are we heading for another baby switch of some kind with Sharon's baby or no?
Oh, God, I hope not. Have they ever done a baby switch on Y&R?
Sheila and Lauren 100 years ago. That was
a long time ago. I hate babysitter stories. I mean, you know, the first time was enough for me. You know, I just don't see the excitement. You know, it worked once, and, you know, how often does it happen in real life?
Well, I mean, you know, you hear about the fluke case every once in a while, but it's not a common occurrence, I don't think.
And also, you know what's going to happen. You know, once you've seen it once, you know exactly what's going to happen. And nobody does it any differently.
So talk about the Daytime Emmys that were just held a couple weeks ago. You know, you were kind of out front again, you know, Maverick Marlena. You kind of liked the Emmys and everybody else kind of hated them.
Well, I liked it because I have been involved with the Daytime Emmys since 1980. And we fought for years to get a respectable Daytime Emmys. There was a terrible Emmys in 84, and a lot of people got together, led by Mimi and Wendy Rich,
mm-hmm.
to form something called the Image Committee to pressure the Emmys to write a better script for next year. And guess who got appointed to work on the Emmys that year to see that they got to write a better script?
You did.
I did. So I got to watch the Emmys. And,
wow.
You know, to work was amazing because I don't, you know, I'm not a TV production person. And, you know, I just think that it's just been this huge struggle that's gone on for years, and most people don't know the first thing about it because most of it was in the 80s and, you know, very early 90s. And, you know, the fact that this year I was shocked. I wasn't even going to watch them. That I thought the script was much better. I thought the production was better, even though one of my best friends had worked on the show in other years and was very upset I wrote that. But I just thought it was very respectful, and I was saying, oh, my God, this is what we were looking for all these years. And meanwhile, everybody else was bitching and moaning that, you know, Bradley Bell didn't get his 5 minutes. So,
exactly.
You know, so this to me was the culmination of a lot of daytime history. And I still don't know who's responsible for making it better.
You know, I mean, there's a couple of different names in the mix. And there's some people out there kind of, you know, taking credit for things.
Yes, yes, I wrote that. Yes, I said this one guy went out and did all the interviews. So, you know, if I was really reporting, I would go out and find that out. But, you know, anybody could write about, oh, they didn't give Bradley Bell enough time. You know, they didn't give blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's not a criticism. The criticism is about the show itself. You know, I'm sorry. I'm being nasty, but I really, really was.
No, not at all.
You know, I just, what could I say? You know, who knows if there's even going to be a Daytime Emmys next year. You know, years ago, do you know Tom O'Neill?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, Tom is a friend, and he's been in my class. We once got together and had a lunch, and we wanted to write a book about the Daytime Emmys. That's how much there was to talk about it. You know, and we were all involved in this big fight, and, you know, it's just shocking that whoever did this did the right thing.
So would it be for the best for the Emmys if it went back to, you know, just being kind of a private luncheon with nothing, you know, no cameras, no glitz?
I was there. I went to one like that in 1980. It was on camera. It was in the afternoon. They had so much food. I remember that because, you know, the networks had a lot of money then. They had the biggest spread I've ever seen in my life. And do I think? No, because I think that the Daytime Emmys belong to the fans. It's not just the people in the industry. I think it should be on TV.
Yeah. So
is this going to be a new one? Is this going to be another one? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the CW was ecstatic with the ratings they got. I mean, you know, they were puny compared to past Emmys.
Good.
But
as
know,
I said, I thought, I'm not talking about the pre-show, which I was not a fan of, but I thought the show itself was okay, and it was shocking to me, and really, really shocking to me. And my other friend, who's been in TV for 25 years, the one who thinks that, you know, that Guiding Light is, you know, should be on radio, and we both thought it was really good. We were shocked, really shocked.
You know, Vanessa was a great host. I mean, she has nothing
she
to do with
great.
It.
She's
was
great.
A great host.
Yeah, I saw her on Broadway in Wicked. No, not Wicked. What was it? Anyway, she's fantastic. She could do anything. She was really good. She's better than Bob Barker. You know, I've seen all the hosts over the years. Better than, who, by the way, Bob Barker was one of my best interviews ever, but that's another story. You know, she was better than, you know, than what they had, you know, Melody Thomas Scott and Eric Braeden. I mean, please. I mean, they're great people, but they're not hosts, you know. So I thought they put on a really good show. And I've written bad reviews every year for like 25 years. So, you know, all the kids have said, well, I thought that, you know, this one should have gotten more time. And I thought that, you know, that's fine. I'm sorry. I'm being obnoxious.
So what do you see happening this fall on the soaps? Are the remaining soaps going to take Guiding Light's departure this week as a wake-up call, or no?
Well, I wrote a column saying that, you know, that ABC had really, you know, like decided to put on the Ritz for this month. In other words, have a sweeps. And,
sure.
You know, they've had all these stories. And but the thing is, why are they having all these violent, disgusting stories? That's not going to get the like Brody's impairment and, you know, all the carnival where
Edward blowing down the carnival.
What? Yeah, our beloved Edward blowing down the carnival. You know, why are you doing all this violent stuff? And when it shows that's about love and family, is going on the air. So I don't know. They just seem to progress on, you know, what they think is right. They think that if they think that stuff is going to get viewers, then let them do it. You know, I just don't want to see anybody impaled, and I don't want to see my grandmother, drive a car into the, you know, my grandchildren. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it's just kind of weird. It's just kind of brutal. You know, I want to see good stories, well-written stories, that's all. And, you know, there's a violence in everything, but I just don't understand why such extreme violence has to be used.
How long does Let's Make a Deal last, in your opinion?
Is it going to be on? That's the one that's going to be on in Guiding Light. You know, I used to watch that when I was a kid, which was well before your time, and I thought it was stupid then. You know, it's not exactly the most brainiest show. So, do you know who the host is?
It was Monty Hall, wasn't it?
It was. He was great.
Yeah.
But who is the host now?
Oh, it's Wayne Brady.
Oh, I like Wayne Brady. I think he's a good host. I don't know. I am not a game show person. I never watch game shows. Not me.
So do you give this a year or?
I don't know. I don't know how a game show is going to do. It's been so long, you know.
Yeah.
It's been so long. And, you know, Price is Right is not really it's a game show, but it's also an institution. So
yeah.
I have no, you know, I asked a friend of mine, like, why did they bring back Let's Make a Deal instead of a lot of other ones? And he said, oh, it's because it's stupid. So I don't know. I just don't know. And I'm not going to watch it. I could care less.
And how about As the World Turns? Do you?
Oh, I pray for it. I hope it goes on. I just, you know, it's such a, you know, another Heart of America show, and I've watched it for so long. And I just, you know, I just hope against all hopes that it just lives forever. My question is, why didn't CBS do more promotion for it when Guiding Light went off the air? I think that's very, very weird. Don't you?
You know, I do, but, you know, the other part of me thinks that, you know, I've seen it all at this point, so nothing surprises me anymore.
Well, I think it's pretty incriminating, don't you? Anyway, you know, they've got good actors, and, you know, they've got a great company, and, you know, I think the storytelling has gotten better in the last 6 months or so. So I want that show to stay on the air forever.
And, you know, they seem to be making a concerted effort to bring back some fan favorites and bring in some actors that, you know, people have a history of liking, so...
Right,
you know,
right. They've done that a lot. And I was just talking last night with a friend of mine. We were talking about if they would bring back Gwen, you know, that would be fantastic. You know, so... God, I watched As the World Turns from, like, 1969, so that's a long, long time. Long time. I just, as I said, you know, I just don't want to see that show go.
Isn't it shocking to realize that, you know, Procter & Gamble, the pioneer of the form, only is going to have one show left after Friday? It's unbelievable.
It's called corporate thinking. Meanwhile, they made like $90 million, you know, $300 million last year.
Exactly.
You know, it's business and cruelty. It's very cruel, especially to all of us who have lived with these shows for so long and, you know, have taken them into our hearts and our lives. It's really, it's not just a cancellation, you know, it's really heartbreaking.
So sum up Guiding Light's legacy in closing here. What is history going to remember about Guiding Light?
That basically was the great, you know, the great American soap opera, and lasted the longest. It was really about America. It was about, you know, normal middle-class people most of the time. It was about faith and hope and love and family. It was about right and wrong. It was about American life, I would say, in the 20th century. I don't know what's in the 21st century, but I think it was really a good reflection of day-to-day American life and what keeps us together. Faith, love, romance, hope, friendship, family.
Wow. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah, and not impar- and you know, that's why it's so sad, you know. It's just so sad.
Well, I tell you what, I have had such great fun talking to you as always. I appreciate you coming by here to help me mark such a sad occasion with a little humor and a fair amount of laughs to kind of, you know, leaven the occasion a little bit.
Well, thank you, Brandon. You're always so great to me, and I really, really appreciate that you asked me to be on, and I will do it anytime. And, you know, I love to talk to you, and I love to talk soaps. And I also would like to advertise my column, MarlenaDelacroix.com, where you could see more of this. And
go there this week. On the front page right now is a reprint of Connie's classic 1992 column, Blueprint for Number One, which is a must-read for anybody who cares about quality soap.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And don't forget to ask Pam about going out on that boat, 1981, in her bathing suit. You say, were you really Miss Alabama? Anyway, I think she was Miss Arkansas. I don't remember which one. But anyway, well, again, Brandon, thank you so much. You're the greatest.
Thank you. You are the greatest. Marlena
okay.
Delacroix, everybody, herself. Connie Passalacqua-Hayman, the great, the great, great, great soap critic.
Okay, thank you so much. See you next time. Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good day. Connie Hayman, everybody, on Brandon's Buzz. Brandon's Buzz in the can for September 16th, 2009. Come on back tonight. I've got Pam Long, the great writer Pam Long from Guiding Light, from Texas, from Santa Barbara, from One Life to Live. That's at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, tonight, September 16th, on Brandon's Buzz. A no-holds-barred conversation with Pamela K. Long about Guiding Light, about soaps, about her amazing career. It's going to be great fun. Please come back for that. Again, that's 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, tonight on Brandon's Buzz. You can find Brandon's Buzz, as I told you at the top, at blogtalkradio.com/Brandon's Buzz, at brandonsbuzz.com, at iTunes. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. Brandon's Buzz is all over the web. Just Google those words, and something will pop up that points you in my direction, and I appreciate you guys coming along for the ride, finding me, listening to me, liking the show, telling me what you like, telling me what you don't like. Please continue to do so. I appreciate you guys so much listening. Please come back tonight for Pam Long, and please stay tuned to Brandon's Buzz.
Hi, this is Brenda Russell, and there is definitely a buzz happening, Brandon's Buzz.
I just had the most fun in the world doing Brandon's Buzz. This is Louise Schaefer. It's a fabulous podcast, and it's a great, great way to spend some time. Brandon is the best.
Hey, hey, this is Nia Peoples, and you are checking out Brandon's Buzz right now.
Hey, everybody, this is Beth Maitland. You probably know me best from my role as Tracy Abbott on The Young and the Restless, and I'm talking to you about Brandon's Buzz. Come on, you got to find him.
Hi, this is Gordon Thompson speaking, and I want to tell you that I have appeared on Brandon's Buzz, and I had a great time, and I think you will too, so please log on.
Merci à vous tous. Écoutez Brandon Buzz sur Blog Talk Radio. Bonsoir et à très bientôt.